The Fringe Radio Network is supported by advertising and donations. But Tony K and A Minute to Midnight is supported 100% by donations only. Please visit aminutetomidnight.com and support Tony K and his family. Tony K needs your help. So we ask you to visit A Minute to Midnight and support him. aminutetomidnight.com.
You are listening to the Fringe Radio Network. FringeRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show, folks. This is Tony, and I'm coming to you from New Zealand. And with me on the show today, for the first time, I have Alex Newman in the US. So it'll be really interesting to have a new guest. It's great to be talking to you today, Alex.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
That's all good. Yet you put out a really interesting article that I saw the other day, and a mutual friend of ours had mentioned that I might want to get you on the show, and I thought, yeah, that'd be a great subject to cover, and that'll be talking about the UN and the World Economic Forum and the war on farmers, basically, and that type of thing. But before we do, perhaps you could just give the listeners a little bit of a heads up as to who you are and what you do.
Sure. I'm a journalist, educator, author, consultant, do a lot of different things. I've been following the United Nations around for well over a decade. My entire journalistic career, I've been going to a lot of their summits and climate summits, sustainability summits, and all the rest of it, with a goal of trying to basically report honestly what's going on there, because there's really not a lot of honest coverage. So that's how I got in on all of that. I've been writing for a lot of different publications. I've written for probably dozens of publications over the years, but I'm senior editor at the New American Magazine. I've got my own site. It's libertysentinel.org, and then I'm a regular contributor to a number of different publications, including the Epoch Times, which is where you found the article that you mentioned. And I've been writing books and exposing the deep state and rebuking evil for as long as possible. So,
sounds good. Well, I think this subject, is something that I've been covering. Well, I've been covering the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset and things like that, and the sustainable development goals and so on for quite a while. So this subject is one that I'm very keen to get your perspective on. And so perhaps if you want to, start off by telling the listeners, a bit of a summary of what the article was.
Sure. So basically, the war on farmers has become very obvious. In fact, I've been chronicling this for at least a decade. At first, I didn't connect all the dots, but I was writing about, what was happening to the farmers in South Africa. And then I started writing about what was happening to the farmers in China. And then I started writing about what was happening to the farmers in Brazil. And then what was happening to the farmers in the United States and in Mexico and, now Holland and Sri Lanka. And so I'm putting all this together and saying, whoa, it's obviously coordinated. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with that article is show that, this is being managed, it's being engineered behind the scenes, and there is actually a manual, an outline for where this is all going, and you find that in the UN Sustainable Development Goals, UN Agenda 2030. It's very clear that, this is where all these policies are coming from. The World Economic Forum, which is, of course, pushing a lot of them, is a strategic partner of the United Nations in promoting Agenda 2030. And so what I did was I just looked at the war on farmers, compared it with the principles and the goals and the targets set out under Agenda 2030, and showed that obviously we're dealing with one and the same things here, and then get into a little bit about where this is all going and how people can resist. So, they kind of tell you some about where this is all going. They want to They call it a transform the food supply. They want us eating bugs and seaweed and things. And I know that sounds totally crazy to somebody who hasn't been following this, but they've been saying, my first article on this was in 2013 when the UN put out a report saying that we need to eat bugs. So that's what they're pushing. You know, they want to bankrupt and destroy small farmers, small ranchers, independent food producers, and bring everything under the control of kind of communist Chinese style, big government, big business, public-private partnerships where, you know, we're all just cogs in the machine and we exist at the pleasure of the predatory class. So, yeah, I know it's a lot, but it was a, you know, complex investigative piece that I hope people will go read. So,
yeah, well, several of their sustainable, well, the 17 sustainable development goals directly implicate farmers and ranchers and generally food supplies around the world, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And what we're seeing now is a coordinated takedown of the food supply. Again, it looks a little bit different in different countries. You know, in South Africa, they go onto the farms and you get government leaders and political party leaders saying, oh, those farmers, they're terrible. They're invaders. They're settlers. We have to go murder them. And so they'll go and, like, they'll torture the farmers and murder the babies. I mean, just absolutely horrific. In China, the government just comes in and says, hey, you know, in the name of efficiency and environment and human rights, we're going to need you to leave this little farm that you and your family have lived on for the last, you know, 3,000 years. And if you choose not to go, then, of course, we'll be killing you and arresting you and torturing your family. So, yeah, you have some options, right? In Brazil, it was horrific what was happening. They were literally wiping whole communities off the map. I mean, very few publications outside of Brazil talked about this, but I used to live in Brazil. And so I had sources informing me what was happening. They were entire villages, entire towns. The police and the military, some of them wearing UN helmets, UN insignia, were going in and ordering these little farmers, these little ranchers at gunpoint, saying, look, you need to demolish your house. You can load up all the building supplies in the back of these trucks and you're out of here. We're giving this land, you know, some Indians who apparently lived here 200 years ago, whatever. I actually talked to one of the Indian leaders who was supposedly going to get all this land. They said, well, our people have never lived on these lands. It's ridiculous. They said, we're Indians of the Floresta, not the Cerrado. So they're jungle Indians, not of the savannah area. So they said the government was just totally making that up as a pretext to wipe out all these farms. A lot of that has been rolled back under Jair Bolsonaro, but it's still ongoing. In America, of course, they got all kinds of excuses, and the whole country saw a little bit of that during the Bundy Ranch scenario. There had been dozens and dozens of big cattle ranches in this region of Nevada. And there was one left standing, one cattle ranch left standing. It had been founded in the 1800s by the Bundy family, and they had been grazing their cattle there for, you know, 150 years. And then one day the federal government decided, hey, there's a desert tortoise there, and we don't think you should be allowed to graze your cattle anymore. So you either start paying us huge amounts of money and moving your cows, or we're going to come in and steal your money, steal your farm, and take your cows anyway. So, you know, that almost turned into a tragedy of enormous proportions. They showed up there with helicopters and SWAT teams and machine guns, and armed people came from all over. You know, I don't know how much people in other countries saw, but it almost became a bloodbath. It was very, very dangerous, very tense situation. But it shined the spotlight on something that's been happening. There were dozens of ranches there. There was only one left standing, and they were going to massacre these people to remove this one last ranch and supposedly protect a bunch of desert tortoises, which is ironic because the government's own researchers were saying the desert tortoises do better when cows live on the land, too. So, you know, at every, and that's just a tiny sampling of what we're seeing. We saw it in Holland. They said you got to reduce your nitrogen emissions. Now we see it in Canada. I'm sure similar things happening in New Zealand. Yes. So they are destroying the food supply. We've seen in the U.S. dozens and dozens of food processing facilities blowing up, burning down. I mean, unbelievable. They're paying farmers not to farm. And so coming soon here, I think we're going to be seeing global food shortages. And what they figured out is that when people are hungry, they're much more likely to do what you want them to do than when they're not hungry. So if you want, say, what the World Economic Forum predicted by 2030, that you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Well, how are you going to convince people to own nothing, right? I own my house. I own my car. I own my cows. You know, how are you going to do that? Well, when you're hungry, you're much more liable to comply than when you're not. So I think what's coming is an orchestrated food shortage to be used as a means to an end, which is ultimately their end objective is a one world system modeled on the Chinese system.
So I mean, I don't, not wanting to be sound mean or whatever, but a lot of Americans I've noticed don't really know what's going on outside of America. Everything's very America focused, but you're obviously seeing inflation and all sorts of things going on there. But the fact is that this is, like you say, happening around the world. It's all of these things are coordinated, and we're all in it in one way or another. Each little country or bit large country may be going at it from a different direction, but we're all signed on to the UN Agenda 2030, and we all send people to the World Economic Forum's Davos, you know, and obviously in New Zealand we've got somebody as a Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, who I do not like and never have, but she was a protege of Helen Clark, who was a former Prime Minister of New Zealand, and she's way up there in the top of the UN driving a lot of this stuff as well. And so, yeah, here in New Zealand, we've got this carbon farming taking over real farming, where they want people to take their livestock off the land and plant pine trees, which are not even native to New Zealand. By and large, they're mostly American pine trees. And, you know, redwoods and different things like that, and some of our native trees and things too. But the point of the matter is they're making it more and more difficult for farmers here in New Zealand through all kinds of methods. You know, they've got something called Three Waters, which they're pushing through. The government's taking control away from regional councils for all our water supplies and, you know, different things like that. It's just, it's insane, but it's definitely driven by these UN Agenda 2030 goals and of course, Klaus Schwab and his World Economic Forum mob are big pushers of this. You will own nothing and be perfectly happy kind of a thing. And but we know the end goal is actually transhumanism with people like Klaus Schwab anyway. But so who exactly, you know, we hear Klaus Schwab and that talking about stakeholders all the time. Now, who is he talking about when he's talking about stakeholders?
That's him and his buddies, right? They're the stakeholders. But, you know, you said a number of important things I want to touch on real quick. You're right. Americans really don't pay much attention to what's going on around the world. They're very inward focused. And that's partly because America is so huge and you know, it's almost like a little world in and of itself. Yeah. And you know, and I've had a different experience. You know, I've lived overseas my entire life. I lived in, you know, 8 different countries on 4 different continents. I've probably been to almost 100 countries in my life. And so, you know, I get to see a little bit about what happens outside of the country and put those dots together. And yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you just explained what's happening in New Zealand. We're seeing the same stuff everywhere. I just was reporting yesterday on the British government. They've got this program where they're going to pay farmers to stop farming and to turn their land into, they call it a woods planting scheme, where they're basically going to turn your farm into a forest. And well, that's cute, except that people still need to eat. Okay, well, where are we going to get our food from? So definitely coordinated. Now, who are the stakeholders? Well, I think they want us to believe that the stakeholders are us, right? Represented by politicians, represented by what they call non-governmental organizations, and represented by big business interests. So they've got kind of this mod, and increasingly they're bringing in faith leaders to allegedly represent the faith community. Mm. So you've got these phony representatives, these phony leaders that are stood up and they thought, here's your leaders, here's your spokesman, here's your representative. And they all come together at the World Economic Forum and they say, the people of the world have spoken. We didn't speak anything. We didn't elect these people for the most part. And I think what needs to be understood about this model of stakeholder capitalism, they call it a lot now, or inclusive capitalism is what the Vatican and the Rothschild dynasty have been peddling. This really is just a return to national socialist style fascism of Adolf Hitler, right? In Nazi Germany, they didn't go quite all the way the Bolshevik way, where they just expropriate everything. You could still own your factory, you could still own your company, right? The rights of shareholders were somewhat respected. If you owned a stake in a company, you still could own that stake in the company. The only difference was, instead of the companies pursuing profit, trying to earn money for their shareholders by serving their fellow human beings, by meeting a need, by producing a good or a service that people are actually willing to pay for, suddenly the stakeholders, that would be the Nazi Party, the government, et cetera, determine what that factory should be making. So yeah, you can still own the factory, but if Adolf Hitler and his stakeholder buddies say you need to make tanks, or you need to make grenades, or you need to make napalm, or you need to make chemicals or whatever it is, then you dang well better do it, or you're going to lose your company. And so it's the fascistic model where there's still profits and there's still private businesses, but instead of responding to the needs of the market. And I guess I should pause for a minute here too and explain that, you know, my understanding of the Bible, God ordained that there should be a free market system. God said, thou shalt not steal. He created a right to property. God said, if you don't work, you don't eat. In other words, it's not acceptable for you to hire somebody, whether they're wearing a fancy costume or not, and go rob your neighbor and say, well, I needed it to pay for my, pick your thing, my children's education, my healthcare, my whatever. Okay. And so as I see it, God created a free market system because that allows our evil human nature, right? God says that the heart of man is desperately wicked. And so we're looking out for ourselves, right? I want to be rich. I want to have nicer cars, whatever. So we're looking out for ourselves. And yet through the free market system, God has forced us to serve our fellow man. If you want to make money, you have to go do something of value for somebody else. You have to produce food for them. You have to wash their car. You have to build a television for them, right? You have to do something that they want done so that they will pay you and give you money. Well, that's the free market system, and it works very, very well. It's a way for us to peacefully cooperate together despite our own fallen, sinful nature. And we've seen historically that it works very well. And incidentally, it also protects the environment better than any other system. You look at the cleanest environments in the world, New Zealand, Switzerland, the United States, what you'll find in every case is these are free market-minded countries with high levels of economic freedom. And then you want to look at the most environmentally devastated places. You look at North Korea. You look at the former Soviet Union. Uzbekistan is a good example. You look at Beijing. You have days where you can't go out of your apartment without choking to death because the pollution is so thick. And not CO2, the gas of life, but real pollution, like actually stuff that kills you. And so the stakeholder model is a move away from the free market system that has produced so much prosperity, so much surplus, so much material well-being, to this model where Klaus Schwab and his buddies and his young global leaders, like your prime minister in New Zealand, like the prime minister of Canada, will be the stakeholders purporting to speak for us, telling companies that don't worry about profits. Don't worry about that. Here's what you need to worry about. ESG, your environmental footprint, your climate, carbon footprint, your how much social justice are you promoting, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really not even a market system anymore. It is it's basically the system that they have in communist China, the system that they had in Nazi Germany, a system where the individual and individual freedom are thrown out the window in favor of the goals of the predatory elites.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty good summing up, and it's a completely different off-the-track subject, but in a way, as you were speaking, I was going, yeah, and of course what they've done is when they got everyone off the gold standard and they to this whole fiat money system where they can just create money at will, the bankers, these elites, well, will just, dial up some more digits, whereas before it was finite, when you've got something like gold and silver and things like that backing the monetary system, or in the past, of course, it was the only monetary system really, like in the Bible days and so on, then you couldn't just do that. But now they've got this system where they can create what they want and give it to their buddies, while the whole system's now collapsing in a way because you've got masses of debt and money printing, to the point of craziness. And then they'll move us into their next system, which will be even more controlling, with central bank digital currencies and all of that. So it does just, well, not seem, it is just a very cleverly knit together agenda to get us to where they're going, which is ultimately world government, I believe.
Yep, that's what they want. And they've actually started becoming more and more transparent about their end goals. I mean, they're now openly on television. We need a new world order. And they're getting pretty obvious about what they're hoping to do to us. And really, it is the elimination of human freedom. It is the elimination. It is the sidelining of family, of church, of any power center, any legitimate authority other than government. And, you know, we know how this ends. We've tried these ideas over and over and over again. Historically, it has ended in massive amounts of death, huge shortages of critical items, concentration camps. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think that's exactly why these people are pushing it. And now, you know, the craziest part of it is that they're talking about doing it at the international level. You know, before you could always escape, right? If you were lucky, you had to climb over the Berlin Wall or go under it, or, you know, you had to find a way to sneak out. But at least there was a place you could go somehow and find some freedom. If they succeed at doing this at the global level, there's nowhere left to go. I mean, unless Elon Musk figures out a way to get us to Mars, you know, we're stuck. And
yeah, but he won't get you to Mars unless you become a transhumanist as well.
That's right.
He's part of the whole club as well, you know?
That's right. He's building the Neuralink. And I mean, I've got videos of him. He wants to saw out a piece of your skull and stick a thing in there. I mean, these people are totally, totally bonkers. And, you know, if you don't agree with this vision for humanity, now would be a real good time to get involved because they're getting closer and closer to success. So,
yeah, totally. So, well, what about the Rockefeller Foundation and all these other tax exempt foundations and the Gates Foundation? And so on, that are so, well, I mean, they've been pushing it for a long time. But what do you make of Bill Gates buying all the farmland that he's, I think he's supposedly now the largest private farmland owner in the US. Why is he buying all the farmland?
Yeah, and he's not the only one. We've got quite a few of these people. Another one who actually owns more land than Bill Gates does. It's not necessarily prime agricultural land, but Ted Turner, the founder of the Communist News Network, owns massive amounts of land. I think millions of acres. And, you know, a lot of it's not farmland. He's got his buffalo there or whatever. But I think and the Communist Chinese are buying up huge tracts of land here. And I'm sure the same is happening in New Zealand, unless you're politicians have a somewhat of a brain and have decided that the Communist Chinese should not be allowed to buy it. But it goes along with the transformation of food agenda. I also happen to think it's a good investment. So, you know, from their perspective of just wanting to make ever larger sums of money, you know, I think agricultural land happens to be a very good buy right now. But, you know, it's very clear they want to monopolize the supply of food. Henry Kissinger talked about in the early 1970s in his infamous national security memorandum that if we can use food as a weapon, if we can use food to leverage our power and get these third world governments to reduce the populations in their countries, hey, we ought to really consider that. And I mean, he talks about we could encourage them to encourage sterilization and abortions and contraception. And that's one of the common threads that runs through the minds of all these people. Bill Gates, Ted Turner, Henry Kissinger, they all believe and have publicly stated, every one of those three men that I just mentioned and plenty of others, that there are too many of us on the planet. Now, you know, in my Bible, God commanded us to be fruitful and multiply, and he told us that children are a blessing, okay? And yet these diabolical elites, they want us to think of them as elites. I don't think there's anything elite about them.
Yeah.
But they view us as a pest. Something to be eradicated. We're spoiling their pretty land for their buffaloes or whatever, right? And it's outrageous. It's anti-human. It's insane. But they have been very clear that they think there's too many of us.
Yes. And, yeah, you mentioned Ted Turner, which straight off took me thinking about the Georgia Guidestones, which, of course, were demolished, I think, by themselves, by probably the people that put them up personally. And maybe that was like an occult ritual almost, to say, right, now we're really getting into earnest to set these goals into play. But, you know, I look at all of these things and think, what's the big thing that they're using behind it as an excuse? More and more it's climate change or global warming. What are your thoughts? Do you think that this is just all that is just a construct to create this whole control? Or do you think that they have some legitimate targets and things in the whole global warming or climate change agenda?
Now, after studying this for over a decade now, I am absolutely convinced that the global warming hypothesis was an absolute fraud from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You go back and you look at the Club of Rome, right? The Soviet Union is collapsing, and they say, oh, what are we going to do now to control people and justify massive government and total control over everyone? They say, hey, maybe global warming, right? Because then humanity itself will be the enemy. what? Humanity is the enemy? That's absolutely bonkers. So I like I said, I've been to these UN climate conferences for over a decade. I've interviewed many of their own scientists. I've interviewed many of the top scientists here in the United States. I've interviewed Trump's climate advisor. In fact, he and I have both spoken on climate change at conferences. And the common thread that comes through this is that from a scientific perspective, this hypothesis that man's emissions of CO2 is causing climate change, global warming, is really preposterous, especially when you take it to the level that there's a climate emergency, climate catastrophe. It's simply ludicrous. Human emissions of CO2 represent a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of 1% of all the greenhouse gases that are present naturally in the atmosphere. One major volcanic eruption could make all of human emissions of CO2 throughout all of human history completely insignificant by comparison. And of course, what we see when we look at the temperature data and the CO2 data is that actually the temperature increases tend to precede the increases in CO2. So it seems like actually the world gets a little warmer, more CO2 is evaporated out of the oceans and things. And so the hypothesis that CO2 is causing global warming, man's CO2, I think is demonstrably ludicrous. But from a totalitarian perspective, it's brilliant because there's nothing that a person can do that doesn't involve CO2 emissions. You can't breathe, you can't eat, you can't sleep, you can't turn on a light switch, you can't even die and decompose under the ground without releasing CO2 emissions. So if you tell people that the gas they exhale is a dangerous toxic pollution, but we can control the weather if you pay taxes to the UN and give up your standard of living, it's so self-evidently diabolical. I can't believe people have fallen for this, but in many cases they have. Not so much in America, at least among the old Americans, but when they start brainwashing the kindergarten students with this nonsense from the time that they can talk, it has an effect.
Yeah, the other gas, of course, that they use as the big boogeyman now is methane, and so that's a good excuse to get rid of cows, and so forth. But if you look at a swamp emits far more methane than all the cows and everything else. It's another crazy, ludicrous part of this whole thing.
Yes, it is. Yep. It's and the same thing with the animals, and they're saying that farming causes global warming. I mean, how is it that everything that sustains us on this planet, that has sustained us for thousands of years, is suddenly dangerous? When these people talk about how evil carbon is, I want everybody to realize you're a carbon-based life form, okay? It's simply preposterous to accept this narrative. And if we allow them to destroy the systems and the mechanisms and the institutions and the infrastructure that sustain us under the guise of saving us from climate change, we are going to be headed into a real hell on earth. Okay, the future that these people have planned for us is abominable, and we have got to resist it, no question.
And I suppose cows emit methane and CO2 and these terrible gases, but endangered tortoises don't.
Right, exactly. And buffalo, and it's so silly for them to say, oh, your cows, they're terrible, but I'm gonna load up this land with buffaloes because I think buffaloes are cute. Okay, that's nice. Can we eat the buffalo? No. Okay, then please let us get back to producing food for women and children and people around the world who need to eat.
It is certainly really crazy, but they don't want that, obviously. So they don't want us being independent, and they don't want people, well, they obviously don't want people farming the way they have for thousands of years, because they make it more and more difficult. So do you think the end goal is to push little farmers off the land completely, and small businesses and small manufacturers, and centralize all of it to major corporations?
Yeah, no question about it in my mind. In fact, that's what you see when you read through their documents, if you can read through the doublespeak. They want to bankrupt and destroy the small family farm, and they want to make it so that all food production is under the control, really, of this tiny, tiny network of predatory elites through these public-private partnerships, they call them, where the big businesses of the world, which incidentally are owned and controlled by a tiny, tiny network of people, in partnership with government, will control every element of food production, food distribution. And when you read Agenda 2030, this becomes very clear. They, over and over again, you hear, we got to change the way we consume and produce goods, right? Well, how are you going to do that? The only way is to have coercive control of the way food and everything else is produced and consumed. And so it's not quite Karl Marx. It's not quite, state ownership of the means of production, because they still want to be able to loot humanity and have, privatized profits. But all of it will be under the control of this central mechanism. And I think Klaus Schwab has these delusions of grandeur that he's going to end up, close to the top. I think historically that's always ended very bad for people. I like to remind people, Joseph Stalin, of his 34 top deputies that he had throughout his career of mass murder and terror, only a tiny handful, maybe three or four, died a natural death. The vast majority were executed or in purges or were sent to Siberia to work camps. And that's what happens. These people will end up turning on each other. They'll end up eating each other. Leon Trotsky, who helped enslave Russia to communism, ended up with an ice pick through the side of his head. Even the elites who think, oh, this is going to be so great, I'm going to be so powerful and so rich, you're kidding yourself, right? Very often, you guys will be the first ones put up against the wall and shot by the people one degree higher than you. So, people really need to realize that when we get rid of the rule of law, when we get rid of the free market, when we get rid of the systems that sustain us, nobody is going to win. It's going to be a disaster all around.
And then you look at people that are that several tiers down from the top that think that they're so important and, they fly around in their private jets while everyone else is being castigated for flying at all, basically. And presumably they're allowed to emit as many greenhouse gases as they want in their private jets, but you and I can't own a car. So we've got to then have electric cars, which of course we know it takes masses of amounts of environmental damage to mine lithium and so on. So electric cars are not their end goal either. They don't want us having any sort of cars.
That's right. And I mean, the World Economic Forum actually came out recently and said that. Well, we got to reconsider this whole ownership thing, and even in that famous prediction video that by 2030 you wouldn't own anything, what do they say? You got to rent everything, right? I mean, this is neo-feudalism on steroids, right? In the feudal system, you couldn't own anything, but if you were a really good serf, your baron or your lord would let you have a little bit bigger of a farm, but you didn't own your farm. You still had to hand over 50% of what you produced, and at any time, the baron could come in and say, all right, you're done, you're out of here. That's what they want for us, right? They say, you won't own anything, they're going to own everything, and you have to rent it from them. It's disgusting. It's abominable, and I think somebody needs to be held accountable.
Yeah, to be honest, there's some scary things being said about people being held accountable too by certain factions, which, I mean, I think people should be accountable too, but there's also some scary revolutionary stuff being talked out there, which I don't think is, well, it's probably Hegelian dialectic in many ways, where they control this side and that side. And then they'll be able to root out the people that they think are the troublemakers because, they have stooges set up there, and then they'll magnetize people to them, and then they'll know exactly who the troublemakers are. I think that's how it kind of works. But, having said that, we can't just sit back and do nothing and just become swallowed up by the system without waking people up and without trying to do something ourselves. But in a practical sense, what can we do?
Yeah, I think you made a really important point there. There are a lot of government infiltrators that are trying to get into liberty organizations. And I tell people one of the quickest ways to spot them is they'll suggest blowing something up or killing someone immediately. You should know there's almost certainly in the U.S. a federal informant or an undercover federal agent. And it's amazing how people keep getting ensnared in these silly things. When I talk about accountability, I mean, we need legitimate prosecutions, a legitimate trial with a legitimate jury. We're talking about so many flagrant violations of our laws. It's incalculable. And then there's the whole Q movement thing. Very, very skeptical of this. You got to trust the plan, and then supposedly these elites are going to be.
That's basically Alice Bailey. It's straight out of the New Age doctrines, where Alice Bailey wrote all these steps for the New World Order, and these people pushing the QAnon movement in behind it all are largely towing Alice Bailey's line. It's just a different way to get to the New World Order, basically.
Exactly. So, yep. Yeah. So in terms of what we can do, you know, I say first and foremost, you know, it begins with the family and the home. We need to restore our marriages. We need to restore our families. We need to realize that government never should have been put in charge of the education and the discipling and the raising of our own children. That is the parents' job. Read your Bible. And so I think parents, you need to do, you know, some real soul searching about your children and the way that they're being raised. I highly encourage parents to consider homeschooling, Christian schools, you know, alternatives where they'll get a good education, where they'll actually learn how to think, where they will learn the Bible and morality. These things are all absolutely critical. From there, you know, we need to inform and educate ourselves. We need to inform and educate our communities. We need to get involved in the political process. We need pastors to be preaching the whole counsel of God and telling their congregations, you know, what God's word says about all these different issues of the day. You know, there's this crazy paranoia among pastors about saying anything having to do with government. And I'm sorry, open up your Bible. The Bible talks more about government than it talks about heaven. Okay, God's people from the book of Genesis all the way to the end have been standing up against evil. I mean, look at you know, Moses, look at Elijah, look at Paul. I mean, all these men stood up to wickedness in government, and so I think we need to be doing that as well. And it, you know, it looks different in every country. I don't know how the political system exactly works in New Zealand. I tell people here in America, you know, get involved, even if it's on your city council or your county commission or in your state legislature. These are important offices that we can use to restore control to the public, that we can use to protect us from bad policies and evil things coming down from the federal level. You know, and these are things that I think we all need to be working on. If you can't run for office, find somebody who's running for office and get behind them, help them knock doors, help them, you know, get the message out, because we are really, I think all of the world today is really standing at the edge of a catastrophe. And we've got to be involved. We've got to be educating ourselves, educating others, and doing what we can to expose and reprove and rebuke evil.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical that anybody gets anywhere serious if they're not part of the club, you know, like it's certainly in political levels, even probably local government level. But I guess people can still try and do their bit in that. But what about if you're a farmer or a food producer, a small landowner, what? And struggling with what's going on, have you got any suggestions for those people?
Yeah, well, you know, I actually happen to have a little bit of dabbling in agriculture. I've got a little bit of land. I got some cattle on my land. And, you know, I encourage people, not just farmers, but also consumers. And, you know, if you're breathing, you probably care about your food consumption, right? Start developing those relationships now with local farmers. You know, all over the country in America here, we have farmers markets. Go meet your local farmers. Go make deals with them. Tell them, you know, hey, I'll get you $100 or $200 a week if you can send a steady supply of fresh produce to my house, you know. Can I buy a fourth of a cow or a half of a cow? You know, support your local producers, develop those relationships with them now, because what's going to happen, and it's already starting to happen, is the big mega corporations, the Walmarts, the grocery store chains, the meat packers and things like this, they're going to try to sideline you. They're going to try to make it so that you cannot sell your products. But if you've already got those relationships with the people in your community, you don't have to worry about if the big corporations won't come and buy your supplies, because you've already got customers that want your stuff. And, you know, I do think we need to get involved in politics. I'm not nearly as familiar with what's going on in New Zealand as I am with what's happening here. But here in the United States, with some exceptions, obviously, but we've got great men and women in elected office at the local, at the county level, at the state level. And these are offices that are winnable. Yeah, there's a lot of election fraud. There's a lot of manipulation. It's a disgusting system. But we really have got to get involved. And, you know, I think part of the problem is that Christians have stayed off the field for so long. And so that's how we ended up allowing people who hate what's good and who hate Christians and who hate our Constitution to end up in control of all the levers of power. And so, you know, start supporting alternative media outlets, start supporting, you know, your local farmers, start supporting local candidates that are doing the right thing. And, you know, ultimately, the results will be up to God, but we are called to do what he's told us to do. And that begins in the family, in the home, with our children, with our spouses. Critical things.
Actually, mentioning the alternative media, of course, the censorship makes it incredibly difficult. And just on that, while I think of it, folks, like I put out my last video, which was about the V word and you know, the mandating of stuff and various things to do with that. And YouTube even took down my trailer within 5 minutes and gave me a strike and banned it. And that was only a 3-minute trailer, not the full video. But so, folks, there is a video that's not on YouTube that I did last week. You might want to go to our Rumble channel or our website or our BitChute channel and watch it, because I think it was a good one, an important one to watch. But this is the reality that we are up against, is the censorship. It makes it incredibly difficult. We have to be so careful what we even say, because we're still using these platforms that are owned by the elite, or the global supposed elites, you know, the Googles and the Twitter and the every other one of them are controlled, and censorship is makes it incredibly difficult. So we're fighting that uphill battle. People really need to realize that if they want to get the information, they're kind of going to have to go outside of those big platforms to find it.
Yep. It's just absolutely critical that people do find sources of useful, reliable information, you know, especially in these times with so much misinformation coming from the fake media, so much censorship coming from the social media platforms. So I encourage people, you know, go to thenewamerican.com, get signed up there for the free daily newsletter. You can go to my website, libertysentinel.org. There's a lot of publications out there doing a good job. A lot of shows out there like yours, you know, trying to get the truth out. And so I encourage people to don't just sit there and consume the information. Also, you know, make use of it. Inform your friends, your neighbors, your family. It's time for everybody really to get involved.
So. Yeah, share the articles and the videos. That's what Absolutely. We need when we're fighting. We're not going to get coverage from Google and so forth pushing things. So, yeah. Share your articles and our videos and things. I think that's really important. And you mentioned the word misinformation. That's the ironic thing about it. They're the ones pushing the misinformation and labeling anything that we say that is against their agenda as misinformation. But that's another very clever part of it. And unfortunately, so many of the public buy it. But the more we can share the information and people can help us by doing that, the better. So, yeah, you've given us your website. Can you just once more, your personal website, if people want to find it?
Yeah, it's LibertySentinel, SENTINEL.org.
Okay, that's good. And, yeah, your articles are found in a lot of other places. There's lots of them out there. I do encourage people to read that article that we started off, which was titled UN World Economic Forum Behind Global War on Farmers. And that was at the Epoch Times. I think there's an abbreviated version of it on the Burning platform and maybe some other places as well. So, yeah, it's definitely worth reading so that people get a handle on what we've just been talking about. Well, Alex, I've really enjoyed this discussion, and I'm glad that I had you come along onto the show today. So we'll have to do one again sometime.
Would love to. Hey, thank you so much for having me on the program. It's really, really great to get to meet you and chat with you, and thanks for what you're doing. And to everybody in New Zealand, you know, we here in America appreciate those of you who are still fighting for freedom and doing the right thing in New Zealand. So keep it up. Thank you guys, and thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it, Tony.
Cheers. Thanks, Alex. And folks, don't forget our website, aminutetomidnight.com. Go to our website and subscribe if you haven't already done so by going down the right-hand side and enter your email address where it says subscribe to blog. And A Minute to Midnight's run 100% by donations. Much appreciated to people that help us. And you can do that at our website if you want help. And the music used, I've written, played and recorded. Well, God bless, folks, and stay safe. Thanks for watching, and hopefully we'll be back with another video in a few days' time.
The Fringe Radio Network is supported by advertising and donations. But Tony K and A Minute to Midnight is supported 100% by donations only. Please visit aminutetomidnight.com and support Tony K and his family. Tony K needs your help. So we ask you to visit A Minute to Midnight and support him. AMinuteToMidnight.com.
You are listening to the Fringe Radio Network. FringeRadioNetwork.com.